ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the True Grit Podcast, where we believe that personal growth and helping each other solve important problems is the best way to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Craig Couch, and every week it's my job to interview top performers and unlock the secrets to their success so that you and I can apply some of their thought patterns, daily rituals, and strategies to our own mission. My next guest is Tom Brown. And he is a super fascinating entrepreneur, and I have a feeling you're really going to enjoy our conversation. Tom graduated from A&M with a degree in psychology, and he thought he wanted to be an accountant until he took his first accounting class and decided that wasn't for him, and he hated it. He's been a lifelong entrepreneur and started his first business at the age of 9. He launched Best Choice Foods in 2001, which is a wholesale food salvage company, and also owns one of the most well-loved wholesale salvage grocery companies in Texas. He's been voted Editor's Choice for Favorite Grocery Store in Fort Worth by Fort Worth, Texas Magazine, and has around 100 employees. So we have a lot to learn from him for sure. His store, Town Talk, has a cult following. One that I've never seen anything like. He's got 30,000 followers on Facebook and is constantly posting on there and just has an incredible following. He's one of the most experienced bargain shoppers that you'll ever meet. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. So you and I met, Tom, several years ago at Indigo Yoga. Man, I bet you and I have done, I don't know, hundreds of classes together. And you've got to be one of the fittest 50 somethings I know.
Well, thank you. That's you say.
So why yoga?
You know, there have been a lot of things, and for some reason, yoga, Indigo just clicked for me. And I was able to fit it into my schedule on a regular basis. And it, I guess it's sort of an addiction, really. You just get in that routine, and it's to a point now when I don't have that at my regularly scheduled time, I can feel it, and people around me can feel it. They want me to go, my wife and my kids especially. So, it's just, I just love it. I'm addicted to it. And it's gotta be hot yoga. I've got to do that. And that's kind of an extreme yoga in my mind. It's a bunch of A personalities that are in there. You know, you get a little competition going. I look over and I see one of my buddies doing something better than me. I'm like, well, I'm going to try to do that better than him or better than her. You know? So,
yeah, I think the yoga teacher would be mad at us for competing, because we kind of, we you're right. That vibe we have, kind of, we call it the bro row. And it's a bunch of dudes. We got Cameron Livesay, who's doing handstand push-ups. And you and me, we're just, there's this competitive vibe, which is not what yoga's about, ironically. But you can't keep it from us. It's like this incredible thing. So what did you do before yoga to stay fit?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've always cycled. I've done a ton of cycling. I used to swim. Mm-hmm. For a long time, I swam. I ran triathlons for a long time. But that was pretty much it. Cycling, swimming. I used to run, obviously, if I was doing triathlons. My body started breaking down with the run. I kept having injury after injury, and I just like, man, this is just hurting. And I'd see my older friends that had been lifelong runners, and they're kind of limping around. Running's great. I love it. But I think it breaks me down over time. So
yeah, for sure. Well,
swimming is too hard to find a place, and I still cycle. So, and I do Pilates too.
Yeah.
That's another good.
So you stay really active. And, you know, as you think about yoga, and just, you mentioned a couple of things that I agree with, which is the rhythm of it, like, and how important that rhythm is. And what I find in the yoga class, because the poses and the sequence of poses is pretty similar. I mean, there's the kind of yoga we do is Baptiste yoga, and there's a sequence. What's so interesting about it is it gives you an opportunity to check in with your body in a consistent way. Man, and I know every little creak and tweak in my entire body because of the yoga. And what do you think, you know, just because you've been doing yoga for so long, I mean, you've taken well over 1,000 classes. What do you think that people misunderstand about yoga?
Well, one of the things I hear most commonly, because I sell people on yoga. I do it all the time. And I brought at least 20 different people, not including my own family, into Indigo to take a class. And only a couple of them have stuck because it is hard and you have to. But I think one of the biggest misconceptions is, oh man, I'll get laughed at. I don't know how to do it. So I'll be embarrassed or I'll look like a dummy in there. And I always say, you know what, man, nobody looks at each other that way. It's great to have a new person in there. It's great to meet a new person, to have a new friend. And it builds in that, you know, community spirit. But that's probably the biggest thing that I see. Now, yoga is this big sort of meditation, Zen kind of a thing. And it is all that, and that's great. I love that. But like you mentioned a few minutes ago, Indigo is a little bit not that way. There are a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners, people that are going 90 miles an hour in their life, and it just sort of carries over into there, and it's fun.
Yeah, it doesn't. You know, I'm with you on that. It doesn't have that real woo-woo feeling to it. It has more of a let's get this thing done and let's work out, and that community piece is really important too. And I find that I feel great when I see you there or see the other guys there. It feels like if I'm not there, you'll miss me. Like, hey, where were you? Where you been? You've been out of town. And it's just neat community.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When somebody's not there for a period of time, I find myself, hey, do you know so-and-so's phone number? Are they okay? I haven't seen them in 2 weeks, you know?
Right. Well, it's definitely vital. And I'm also curious about, you know, you're in the food business. And so I'd love to know what the heck you eat. I mean, you have an incredible variety of choices of just being around food all the time. I mean, I think I'd be grossly overweight if I was in the food business. I don't have the discipline you have, but what's your diet look like?
Yeah, I'm a really clean eater on the whole. My wife, we cook every day. She cooks really in a healthy way. We don't have junk at our house. I think our kids were probably 10 years old before they ever ate at McDonald's, which is crazy. I think my parents took them there.
They broke your parents, the grandparents. Leave it to the grandparents to break the streak.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, hey, I'll eat a McDonald's quarter pounder every once in a while. I'm not like that hardcore about it, but I just find myself eating cleanly. One thing that I struggle with is not eating. I forget to eat and I have to. So I keep almonds on my desk, in my car, snacks like that, a lot of nuts.
Almonds are your go-to snack?
My go-to, yeah.
Do you eat them raw or do you eat them? Do you
roast I eat them every way. Like when I'm in the convenience store, I'll buy the ones that have the wasabi on them that have been roasted, and then I'll eat raw, unsalted, every version.
I love it.
And they're just kind of my favorite.
Yeah, I'm always munching.
And I have there's some right there. Yeah, they're on my desk all the time. So.
Well, so you started your first business when you were 9 years old, and I'm just curious how your parents, just tell me the story behind that and how your parents responded to the inter-entrepreneur that you had at such a young age.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I hadn't really thought about it, but my parents are still all about hard work. And so I never got a, hey, you shouldn't do that from them concerning any crazy work type idea. It was, and they supported me all the way. And whether it was driving me around to paper route. Getting up at 5 a.m. on a weekend to throw your papers, and you know your dad had to get up and drive you. Never once was it ever, oh gosh, what a bummer. Total support. They just let me go. They didn't steer me. The only time I can ever remember being steered is I had this, I call it a weed pulling business, which is weird, but I'd go around to the neighbors and say, hey, I'd like to weed your, you got all these weeds in your garden. Well, one time I did that for a home builder and he sort of disappeared. Like, I think he was financially struggling, and that drove my dad crazy that I never got paid for this one job. And I think it was like $12 this guy owed me, you know, and my dad made me look for him for 6 months until I found him. And he would ask me about every other day. I can't remember the guy's name. Did you find
$2? Yeah.
And I eventually got it, you know, I mean, like but no, they didn't steer me. They never discouraged me. So I guess that was a form of encouragement.
What was the first business?
Well, the very first thing I did, and this is kind of wacky, I realized you could make money by selling your recyclables. So I went around the neighborhood. It's when everybody, back in our young days, everybody got a paper newspaper and they just pile up. And this was before curbside recycling. I'd never heard of that. That wasn't a thing. And so I went around to hundreds of houses and asked if everybody would just set their newspapers aside and I'd come by on Sunday and pick them up. So my parents would have to drive me in the old beat up family station wagon and we would cram that thing. There was newsprint smeared on all the seats and everything. We would go around and pick up the newspapers on Sunday, and then Monday morning we would go. Now, this was mostly in the summer that we would do this, so we had, you know, no school to worry about, but I would go, they'd drive me to the place that accepted these recyclables, and I'd have to unpack the car and stack it on their little weighing scale type thing, and conveyor would carry it up into the big truck, and invariably I'd get $7 or $8 for a whole truck or a whole carload of this newspaper. But kind of a funny aside to that, a buddy of mine, his older brother was a beer vendor at the old Arlington Stadium. Okay. And I got to talking to him one day, and he was telling me about his job, and I thought, aluminum cans. They're all in aluminum cans. And so I literally went, I had my parents drive me up to Arlington Stadium, and I banged around on chain fences and doors. I finally got a hold of somebody, and I said, look, I've got an idea. I want to collect your beer cans. Once a week, I'll come by and get your beer can, your aluminum cans, thinking that they had never thought of that. Well, first off, looking back on it, I had no idea what the volume was in my 9-year-old mind. He's like, son, do you realize we have 18 wheeler fulls of beer cans every day?
Like, and you're the only fourth grader that smells like Miller Lite.
Exactly. Well, and they laughed at me. I'll never forget. I was a little bit embarrassed, a little bit mad, but I still look back on that, and if you could be the aluminum recycler that got all the beer cans from a major league park, it'd be a pretty good account, you know.
Pretty good account.
But that didn't work. But my parents never said, don't, you can't do that for this reason or that reason. They just drove me up there. And
I love it. That's so supportive, and that's a really good lesson. Because it would be easy to say, you know, son, that's nuts. You know, we're not doing that. You know, it's going to mess up our car. There's not a good return on investment, but instead just they mash the gas and just supported you, which
I
think that's a great lesson for parents out there. So fast forward to a little bit closer to now, I did a little research about you on the internet, and it looks like you bought Town Talk back in 2013. But it also looked like you were in the industry, the wholesale grocery industry. Tell me that story.
Yeah. So my niche in the food business is pretty commonly referred to as a salvage grocer or salvage distributor, salvage food person. And I had started a salvage wholesale business. It's named Best Choice Foods. And we would sell to people like the Town Talks of the world, the salvage grocers. We still do. We still have that company. And we sell to anybody that, when we hire a salesman, they're like, well, what's my territory? And I said, well, man, if you can figure out a way to sell food to Mars, you can do it. Your territory is unlimited as long as nobody's calling on that person. So, we started that in 2001, and we still do. We do a lot of correctional business, jails. We do a lot of school business. We do a lot of charitable type work with churches and that sort of thing. And Town Talk was a customer of mine. I sold a lot of food to Town Talk, and that's how I got to know the guys at Town Talk.
Well, can you describe how you get the food? Like, what are the avenues of on the buy side? Because you've got to buy right to be able to.
You do. There are a lot of avenues. It's kind of unlimited. We find new ones every once in a while that we just stumble upon at this point. We don't buy from any individual stores. It's all from distribution centers. So it's big facilities. So we send in full-size 18-wheeler to pick up from these guys. Some of them are on a schedule that we just go to on a regular basis, maybe weekly, maybe monthly. Some of it's on as needed. They'll call me when they have something. Manufacturers. In Dallas-Fort Worth, we're really lucky that there are so many manufacturers here, not just in the food industry, but, and it's not just food that we buy. We buy paper products. We buy anything that we can get a deal on. And that's kind of what makes Town Talk fun, or one of the reasons, is you never know what you're going to find. Go in there and it's some kind of gourmet food item, or it can be a meat and potato item, but it can be a paper product or a hardware. Some of you buy at the hardware store. I'm offered crazy things every single day. And
what are some examples of some of those funny things that you buy or are offered?
Oh gosh, it's almost I could go on a long time. One time US Airways, which is no longer even around, I think they merged with American, or American bought them. I may be wrong, but anyway, they disappeared. But they had like two truckloads of the little airline packages of peanuts that were coming up on short code.
What's a truck? Wait a minute. What's a truckload? What do you mean?
An 18-wheeler full. So it was more than an 18-wheeler full. So you're talking 40,000 pounds of individually bagged peanuts with U.S. Airways on. The same ones the flight attendant would give you when you're on a flight. And so we ended up with these things, and it was right about the time that peanut allergies started really becoming a thing. And we had a hard time
selling those things.
Because even in the jails and the prisons, they were like, well, we've got too many people that have allergies. So, that's one of them. We have bought, oh my gosh, just a lot of things we get maybe from a manufacturer, like a recipe mess up. Like some guy falls asleep on third shift and triples the amount of ground pepper that goes into the recipe. And these guys don't run 5 pounds of product. They run 80,000 pounds of product. And so by the time that's done, what are they going to do with it? You know,
you get 1,000 pounds of over peppered crab cakes.
Right. It can be things that are really high end all the way down to, you know, ground beef that doesn't have a good lean content and it's not good for you. But we can sell just about anything if the price is right. There are people out there who'll buy just about anything. We bought 110,000 safety masks on Saturday. Kind of the end thing right now, but we'll sell them cheaper than anybody else. If you're in a retail, like you need to buy some masks, they'll be in Town Talk stores for cheaper than anywhere else.
I love it. Well, one thing that surprises me about your store is just that there are some really high quality things. Like you've got Wagyu beef and you've got super high end kombucha. That I'm a kombucha fan. I mean, I saw that on your Facebook feed recently. It's just like, golly, that's like $1.20 for a bottle of that. It's $5 at Sprouts. So
yeah, for a while we were getting kegs of kombucha. And I'm not a big kombucha guy. I mean, it's okay, but I was taking those kegs up to Indigo and setting them out on a Friday afternoon, and you know, instead of a, it was kind of a kombucha keg party. Just wanted to drink kombucha, and those yoga guys, man, they go crazy over it.
I was one of them. I was there that day. That was awesome, man. That's so good. And it's good to serve it after class.
I had to go to the liquor store to rent a tap for the keg. It's the same tap they use for beer, but we got all these kegs. We didn't have taps, and so we sold them to bars and restaurants. But if I wanted to use one, I had to go rent a tap. So you know, I had to go rent one from a liquor store. It's not a hard thing to do, but anyway, it was it was fun. But we get really health type things, high end. Mm-hmm. A lot of organic, a lot of you said Wagyu beef. We just bought a bunch of Wagyu beef ribs not long ago, and they disappear so fast. Somebody comes in and they see them, and they know what it is, and they may be a little more expensive than what a normal product in Town Talk would be, but it's so much cheaper than anywhere else if you wanted a Wagyu beef rib. Yeah. That somebody realizes what it is, and it may be a restaurateur or a real foodie person. They'll come in, they'll buy every one of them. And a lot of these guys go and resell what they buy at Town Talk. There are a lot of people that work in flea markets and even door-to-door guys that'll come by and fish around at Town Talk and walk out of there with something they can resell. All these online guys, they buy a lot of stuff at Town Talk, you know?
And then resell it on Amazon.
yeah. And that's the thing. We have such a diverse crowd in so many ways. I mean, diverse in ethnicity, diverse in age, diverse in what they do with this product, what they do for a living. And it's like this big miniature melting pot of people that would never really associate with each other on the outside because they just don't run into each other. And then you might see a totally ripped bodybuilder visiting with a 90-year-old grandma about some recipe that they do with whatever they're getting at Town Talk, and they become friends. It's like these guys would never know each other. It's a blast to stand back and watch. And we encourage that. That's part of one of our missions is to sort of propagate, encourage, grow that mixing and kind of do our little bitty bit of good in this world. It's so crazy. And encourage that. And we, same thing with our employees. We have such a diverse group of employees, and it's so fun for me for the Arlington store, I hired a woman that's Tongan. We've got someone that's Marshallese. Did you know there's a Marshallese language? This woman speaks Marshallese. Nobody else in the world speaks it unless you're from the Marshall Islands.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you must not get to speak your native language very much. Well, that's kind of a bummer. She said, no, there's a lot of people that live around here that are Marshallese. Who knew? You know? So it's
well, you do now.
And then you tell these guys, hey, how do you say good morning in Marshallese? You know, it's fun to learn, fun to be around, just different.
I love it. Well, I do. I get the impression when I'm in there, first of all, I always see somebody I know. And it's, you're right, it's from all different walks of life for sure. And the vibe in there, it has an interesting vibe because it's like, I've seen it, I've heard it described as a treasure hunt where you've got this, it's not necessarily frantic, but it's a little competitive a little bit sometimes. Cause I think when people, especially cause I've seen these, I've been in there where I've seen groups of people hovering over something. I'm like, what the hell's over there? I got to go see what that is. Yeah. And it's something that just came in that people are putting out, and it's quite an interesting feeling being in there, because you do find these little treasures of awesome things that you typically pay, and then you're paying a third or a fourth of the normal price when we come to Town Talk.
It is competitive, and it has happened a lot more than once, where it's not, we don't have an unlimited supply. It's, we get a deal on something, and then we can't just pick up the phone and call and get that deal again. And we've got to search for it or wait for it to. So if it's the last one of something, it's happened where people will reach into your buggy and snag your, because it's the last one and you're not looking. And I'm not talking about some criminal looking person. I'm talking about a nice, sweet old lady. Sees another nice, sweet old lady not looking, and she'll reach in and take that item. And, you know, we have police officers that we hire on Saturdays, because it's a little bit of a different beast on Saturdays. A little more crowded, a little more fast paced. And it's not because of the crime that we're worried about. It is to keep the peace from people cutting in front of each other or grabbing the last one of something. Or so, yeah, it is a competitive, it's a golfing competition and a treasure hunt. Look what I found. Look what I got. Look at this. Look what I got at Town Talk. You know, it's, and when we put something out, the cell phones come out. You can just see people of all backgrounds calling their friends.
Like, oh my gosh, they have kegs of kombucha. Get down here.
Or we get these big flower deals where it'll be an overshipment of fresh flowers and a whole truckload. And, you know, you have to sell those things fast because they don't last that long. So we'll sell a bouquet that's a $20 bouquet. We'll sell them $2 a piece, six for $10 or something like that, you know, just to blow them out, because we have to move them. And it's when those things happen, it's an absolute blast. It is so fun to be down on the floor.
It's fun, and it's also probably a very clear picture of human nature that you're seeing.
It is a lot of basic human nature.
Yeah, and your psychology degree probably comes in pretty handy.
I think it does. It's funny. Why do I have a psychology degree? It started out because the girls were a lot cuter in the liberal arts college at A&M than they were in the business school. So you end up with a degree in psychology. What are you going to do with that? I don't know.
Own Town Talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, So you started out and Town Talk was your customer. And I'm just so curious, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're seeing this business, a family run business, it's been around since the 50s. Tell me how you noticed the opportunity. Was it all at once, or what were you noticing while you were
actually one of my mentors that is still in Fort Worth and is a very successful person in the food manufacturing world, knew the owner of Town Talk. And I didn't know the owner. I knew several of the employees because we sold to them. But we were at out one evening and we saw him, and he came up and he whispered in my ear. He said, "I know a business that you need to buy." And I was like, what are you, I'm not looking to buy a business. I've got my business. I've got all I can handle. And he said, "Just later on, come find me and let's talk." And so he did. He said, "Town Talk Foods." And I said, "Town Talk Foods? Really?" He said, "Yeah, you know, the owner is wanting to just slow down a little bit, and it may be time for him to go on to the next chapter in his life and work life." And so one thing led to another. He made the introduction, and it took us well over a year of hammering the deal out. We would disagree. It would come to the biggest impasse, and I would literally say, "Yeah, that deal's just not going to work." And then something would happen, and it would rekindle our discussion, and he would say, "Well, this just isn't going to work." And it just went on like that for well over a year until we finally agreed on a deal. And and I had a lot of help from mentors, and especially that mentor in particular. So
Well, that's so real quick. I'd love to, if you can remember some of those, what were some of those particular impasses that made you think, oh, this deal's not going to work? And I just want to kind of dive into just for a second, some of the elements of the struggle between the time of, hey, I might be interested in the time of closing. You know, there's a lot that goes on right there. And I'd love you to tease out a couple of those little elements that you were able to overcome.
You know, I think part of it, and I don't mean this as a bad thing, and I've never sold a business, so I can't know exactly what that feels like, but I think the previous owners of Town Talk did a fantastic job. I mean, I have done pretty okay by taking their great work and then expanding on that, but you've got a guy that had spent 30 years of his life running Town Talk, and actually, I mean, the main partner in their group, he ran Town Talk, and so he was super proud of it, and he was really careful who he wanted to sell to. There are a lot of people that want to buy Town Talk. They don't, and they wouldn't be able to do it unless they have a knowledge of salvage food, for one thing. Not to mention just a knowledge of business and how hard it can be, and how fun it can be, but it can be hard. So some of the impasse came from that, you know, like, I don't want you to do that with my business kind of stuff. I think it was hard to let go, and someday it probably will be for me too. So that's what I mean by, I don't think that's a bad thing. A lot of it came down to terms and money and what things were actually worth, and rightfully so, the owners were really interested in how I was going to finance the deal, and they wanted someone that wasn't going to buy the business and then run out of money and run the thing into the ground. We really worked on that, and we worked on that parts of that together. Those were the biggest impasses.
I would guess that you might feel the same way about your legacy and the brand and maintaining that brand and when it comes time to sell. But that's a really interesting thing. My dad owns a True Value store down in South Texas, and it's been in business for 90 years.
Wow.
And it's my namesake. It's Couch True Value Hardware. He sells vinyl siding, all this stuff in South Texas. Cool. And he's selling it this month, in fact. Cool. And he's been doing it for 50 years, and I can only imagine how that must feel to build something and put your heart and soul into something and then have to move on from it. So I can see why it would be a little bit sticky with a company that's been around so long.
I think the person I bought Town Talk got really lucky. I sometimes think if I ever decide to sell Town Talk, it's hard to find somebody that, because we had some similarities, we had a lot of differences, but I knew the world of salvage. Not many people even know that really exists. Mm-hmm. Salvage food. I am a real hands-on person. I don't do great in an office. So I like to be real hands-on, and that's what it takes in this business. It is not a keep your hands free of dust and dirt. I mean, you're digging and going, and at the same time you're on your phone driving down the road, and you know, you're thinking, I need to get to a computer because I need to send this offer in. Yeah. So it's real high paced, and that's how I am, and that's how you have to be in this business. And he found that in me. He was concerned about his employees. I just absolutely have always loved my employees. It's to a fault. I will not make a decision I need to make, and it's burned me a few times because I love my employees. And it kind of goes back to this diversity thing. We work real hard to hire every shape, size, color, political leaning, sexual preference, you know, all that stuff. I want it all. I want every kind of person, young, old, and I want to make it work. And so a lot of the employees that were there in 2013 are still here now. We don't have especially for a grocery, we don't have a real high turnover. So that was something else that he got lucky with. And I think when you sell a business, you got to be careful that you're, especially a small business, you're not selling to somebody that is just doing it to try to make a buck. I kind of look at it like if you're in it and you're working hard and it's a good concept and a good solid base of practice, the money's gonna come. You know, it'll take care of itself. Sort of. You got to watch it. You got to work on it. I think that's what they were worried about too. I don't think they wanted to sell this business to someone that was going to turn around and sell it, flip it, or carve it up, and you know, one of those kind of things. And I'm in it for the long haul. What I do. Yeah. It's what I live every day to work on.
Yeah, right. I think he is. He did sell it to the right guys. So it's an interesting idea that when you're buying a company or wanting to buy a company from a seller that's really emotionally attached to it, there's got to be a lot of dots that have to be connected there. Mm-hmm. But you said something I want to get back to. You said that I really love my employees. And mm-hmm. Can you tell me what kind of love that is and what that looks like?
Well, yeah, it's not a hard enough love. You know, I will hold on and keep on trying. And I've got some crazy, crazy stories over the years of, you know, trying to help people figure it out. And I'm a lot better now, but you can't change people. Once you're an adult, it's hard to really teach someone a new way, but it does happen. But it's a love a lot like kind of like family, really. And it sounds corny, but people will say, oh, whatever, Joe's Bait Shop, we're a family here. And they may or may not be, I don't know, but there's a ton of that here at Town Talk. People are really close. We have a lot of ethnic people, and I'm a lover of the Mexican culture for one. And so I go to these guys' birthday parties and their baptisms and their quinceañeras, and my kids go too, and my wife, and we see them as just super important, like they are, and not just employees. So it kind of goes beyond that, and that will get me in trouble sometimes. You know, it's hard to make a call that needs to be made, and so it's I get a little too emotionally involved, but it is a love that way. I want to see these guys do well. When it comes time for one of them to leave on their own volition, hey, if I can help them, that's great. You know, I can hire another person and find another good person. I think it may take a little work, but if somebody's going to better themselves and they have a better opportunity, you're not going to work usually in a grocery store your entire life. You're not going to sack groceries your whole life. And I really don't want somebody to sack groceries their entire life. If we hire a sacker, I want them to be here to sack groceries. And I want them to aspire to a new challenge, whether that maybe they move on to stocking shelves or driving a forklift, or maybe they want to get into management. We have a lot of managers that don't have classical educations. I mean, they have stopped their education at an early time in their lives. And we try to search out the ones that just have something. And we've done it a lot. We've struck out several times. It's when I go to work every day, I get a smile on the inside and the outside when I walk in and I see the employees. They work hard. They know what to do. We don't have a problem with dishonesty. I'm not a naive guy that says that stuff doesn't exist to some degree, but it's just, it's a lot of people that want to work and do a good job and be proud of their job. And that's part of our core values. Be proud of what you're doing, no matter what it is. And, you know, if the bathrooms are dirty, I'm going to go clean the bathrooms and I'm going to clean the heck out of them because I'm going to do the best job I can. I want them to be great. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need from every one of our employees. There is none of this. Well, that's not my job description. When you're a Town Talk employee, everything that we do is in your job description. It kind of, if it needs to be done, and somebody's not around to do it, you need to do it.
Yeah. So, and if they're not around, you're going to do it by example. Exactly. I think that's a really cool thing. And I actually feel that vibe when I come in there, that the employees have this satisfaction and almost adoration and pride of being a part of the Town Talk culture. I feel that when I come in. The reason I feel it is because I know what it feels like when it's not there in a store, when people are not happy to be at work. It is a completely different environment. I think it's a key to the Town Talk success that you've carried on. Because you still have a lot of the employees you said from. And I'm guessing that's what you meant by, you know, the previous owners really did a great job.
Oh, and in a lot of ways they did. I mean, the original owner was an amazing man, and then the people that ran it after him were great and smart and super hardworking and
right.
There's not a lot of fancy stuff. We're kind of a low-tech group. We've introduced a lot more technology over the last few years than was ever here before. But that's why we have 100 employees. A typical three-store grocery chain, if you want to call it that, would not have that many employees. It's a lot of hands-on stuff. When our trucks back up to the dock, we're unloading that and looking to see what's there, because we take everything when we have an agreement with somebody. And sometimes, some days it's rocks and some days it's diamonds, you know, and we have to take it all and we have to figure out something to do with it. And, it can be a super challenge, but our employees are getting their hands on things, moving things around and I'm out there too. It's fun, but that's kind of the atmosphere that we want and that we have. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of compliments on our employees, like, oh my gosh, that person was just so nice to me. And to be honest, our customers are, generally speaking, the nicest people in the whole world. It is truly surprising at times. You end up just really knowing and liking a customer, and that's part of the fun. Now we have our problems. Like, I'm not saying it's Shangri-La or, we have issues and then we deal with them as best we can, but we want our employees to be super nice to the customers, and we hope the customers are nice right back and everybody gets treated as they should be treated. That's the vibe.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely comes across that way. And so you have expanded to Weatherford a couple of years ago, and then you've expanded again. I'm just really curious, how did you know? Because you started you bought the company in 2013. It's been 7 years, you know. And how did you know when it was time to add another location? And how did that change the dynamic for you as the founder and the owner?
Yeah, that's a great question. when I was negotiating to buy Town Talk, that was one of the things I had in my mind that I wanted to do. And I couldn't wrap my, and I still really can't wrap my head around why, since 1954, has there only been one Town Talk? And I think it was just preference of the people that were here before me. And I had a desire to see if it could work, see if it could be expanded. And I hate the idea, and I do this with a lot of things, that I'm on my deathbed and I say, doggone it, I always wanted to try that and I was too afraid to do it and I didn't do it. And so we decided to open another store just kind of once I felt like I had a team and I had sort of rebuilt the base of this business, the foundation as far as the operation goes. I knew it would be a logistical, sometimes nightmare, but a real challenge. A big question is, can you get enough product? I still don't know the answer to that. So far we have, but it's, again, we can't pick up the phone and say, send me another truckload of ground beef at, you know, 50 cents a pound. That's just not how it works. So I decided, hey, a smaller store might be a good thing just to see if we've got this blueprint going that we can sort of transfer to another location. So the store in Weatherford is about a third the size of the Fort Worth store, and it's fantastic. And it is, again, people in Weatherford are so nice. You think Fort Worth is kind of a small, big town, and it is. Just people in Fort Worth, Arlington, are super nice. Like, you compare them to maybe someone from a truly giant city like a New York City. They're just different, and it comes across as maybe not being as friendly and as warm. So Fort Worth is that way, and all the little, you know, areas around here. You go to Weatherford, and it's like a whole different world. They are the nicest people. Like, the light can turn green, and you can be on your cell phone, you know, looking down, and nobody honks at you.
They just wait. Well, I guess he must be posting something on FaceTweet, so I'll just let him finish.
In a hurry if you're driving through Weatherford, because people aren't in a hurry. The light turns yellow, and you can make it through in Fort Worth legally. In Weatherford, yellow means, yeah, stop. You don't need to make another car through. You know, stuff like that. It's great. So Weatherford is different, but it's great. And so we have been able to open that location and make it work. And part of the worry also is, can I find enough people that I can feel the same way about the way I feel about my Fort Worth guys? You know, can I? I was also nervous. I have a propensity to overextend myself time wise, and that's been a real hard thing. And I'm real nervous about the Arlington deal because you just can't be everywhere. I've worked real hard on kind of letting go over the years and really trying to watch out. I'm not a micromanager. I don't want to be, and I never have been, but you really can't be you can't even manage more than one location. You have to have somebody that can manage each location, and then you can work on the whole of the business, which is something I'm trying to learn to do. So that's what Weatherford was all about. Can we do it? It's a smaller store. If we realize we can't do it, then I'll run Town Talk as one store forever. I know that I would have given it another try if Weatherford would have failed. I would have, you know, gotten my breath back and done it again. Well, Arlington came about a little bit faster than we wanted to. We've got a landlord here that is great, and he really wanted a Town Talk in his strip center.
Wow.
And he worked with me and worked with me. And I mean, it literally started off, no, sir, I'm not interested in a third location right now. I'm not. And he kept after it and started showing up in the store. Hey, can I drive you over there? Will you get in the car with me and drive over and look at this location? And, you know, I grew up a lot in Arlington. I went to junior high and high school here. So I knew this location. I was like, well, I'm from Arlington. My parents still live there. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's not, I think it is a great location. And, he just kept on it and kept on it. And eventually he made a good enough deal that I was like, man, this is a good deal and let's go for it. This is a big store. It's bigger than the Fort Worth store.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
And so,
what's the square footage of that? How big is that?
This one's about 34,000 square feet. The one in Fort Worth is right at 30,000. Mm-hmm. But as a percentage, on top of just being bigger here, and I'm in Arlington right now, the percentage of the space that is dedicated to a sales floor is larger here. We have a larger warehouse area in Fort Worth in relation to the total square footage. Mm-hmm. So we have about 6,000 square feet here that would be considered warehouse and prep area. So 6,000 out of 34,000 here. And in Fort Worth, it's 10,000 out of 30,000. So about a third of the space is dedicated to that kind of stuff. So it feels giant when you walk in. And that's what, you know, I'll have a friend that say, hey, I want to come check out the Arlington space. Yeah, come on over. The first thing they always say is, oh my gosh, it's big. It's giant. I'm like, don't say that. You know, I'm already thinking, hoping it's not too big. But so this will be a really interesting undertaking. And the thing is, this area of Arlington is multi-ethnic, busy, hardworking class area, a lot more densely populated than the Fort Worth area that the store is in. We're going to be great for this community. They are going to be able to feed their families, not have to go to eat fast food every day. They can come in here and get fresh vegetables and fruit and hopefully sit around the table and have a meal together, and which used to happen a lot more when we were kids. And that's part of our mission too, is to keep little kids from having to eat every meal at McDonald's, which again, once in a while eating at McDonald's, that's fun and no big deal. But it hurts me inside, being a physically active person and valuing that as part of a healthy longevity in life. You see little kids that don't have any say in what they eat, and they're being fed hamburgers and French fries because that's cheap and easy for a parent that's working two jobs and trying to make it all work. It's cheaper than going to a conventional grocery store a lot of times. And they grow up and they're 15 years old and all of a sudden they have diabetes or some other health concern. And that just breaks my heart. Knock on wood, I'm a relatively healthy person and I want to be that way when I'm 80, you know? And I want other people to be able to do that too. And that, again, I've got several corny, what I call corny ideas, but that is a heartfelt part of what we try to do here. If I go to the sales floor in Fort Worth, it almost every time I go down on the floor, you know, every day, somebody will come up and say, thank you so much. Without this place, I would not be able to feed my family. And it, wow. It's a tearful thing. And that's fits right into our mission. Like we want to help people that are on budgets or down on their luck or just like the art of finding the deal, because it is, like you said, a treasure hunt. And that kind of gets back to the huge variety of people that come in here. There are people that are one step away from living out under a bridge somewhere. And you'll look out in the parking lot and you'll see the fanciest cars you've ever seen in your life. And they're all in here, you know, it's great.
It's so cool.
It's so funny. And, so.
That's a really great answer. And you know, I want to zoom out real quick. We're running low on time, but I wanted to zoom out real quick. And I want you to comment on how EOS, which stands for Entrepreneurial Operating System, which is sort of like, it's an operating system for operating your business. You and I have that in common. We both use EOS in our companies. Give me an overview of what EOS has meant to you and how it's helping with the expansion.
Okay. Yeah, that's another great question and something I'm passionate about. EOS has really just made things black and white, given accountability to a lot of people for different parts of the business. And it really has set it up for me that it's either been done right or it's not. And everybody knows that. It's not a surprise. They know if they're getting it done or not, and they're held accountable. It also has really helped us in getting us together as management on a regular basis for a very solid, structured meeting that we run, and it is broken up into time segments. And if you're going over, the buzzer buzzes and we're moving on. So we're not sitting in a meeting for 4 hours, and we have one of those a week. And so that cuts down on the number of real meetings you have to have, which I like talking, but I don't like sitting down at a table and having a meeting. That's just not something I like.
Well, you're even standing up right now. You can't even sit down for an interview.
I stand up all day. It's given us just a real structure. It helps in goal setting. In the EOS that I use, they're referred to as rocks, and everybody gets one each quarter, and you have to update the group as the quarter goes on. And if it's not done at the end of the quarter, when we present our results, your peers and your coworkers are looking down and saying, man, dude, you didn't get it done. And it's just given us a lot of structure that we didn't have before. So,
well, we had a lot of structure before. My business partner is a high structure guy. I'm wired a little bit more like you, but he is highly structured. And what I found was that the EOS system actually simplified the structure for us. Like, we didn't go from zero structure to structure. It was more like we were almost, in a way, there was a parts of our business were over-structured. And the reporting mechanism weekly was just exhaustive. We were reporting on like 30, 40 different metrics constantly. And EOS has forced us to distill these metrics that are important, for the weekly scorecard. And then also how those metrics interact with the rocks, as you call them, which are quarterly goals. It's truly been such a huge help organizing our business. And getting one of my favorite things about EOS is just how it's gotten our entire leadership team on the same page.
And you have to have a leadership team that will all buy into the idea of it and really decide to give themselves up to the process. And if you have a naysayer, it makes it hard for an EOS to work, in my opinion. But we get so much more done. The rocks, like we both brought up, you walk around your business and you say, man, we really need to do this. And you just never have time to do it. And you might try to delegate. You might delegate it to somebody. And they're like, yeah, when I get time, I'll get on that. Well, 6 months later, they're still looking for the time. This way, these things are brought up. These are the things we need done this quarter. Who's going to take this one? Who's going to take that one? And then there, it's a true assignment in front of all your peers, and you're going to get that done. So in that way, we get so many more projects done and properly completed. And it's a real rallying team feeling too. If you're having a hard time, you bring in one of your buddies to help, and you get it figured out.
Did you have a lot of pushback, Tom, initially when you installed the EOS process into your company?
We had absolutely zero, which is a real rarity. When you read the fictitious book on EOS that takes a company and they run, they show the pushback that people get, because that's usually the case. And most people that I know that have done, you know, gone this way with their businesses, they have had pushback. We have had, I'm not kidding, zero pushback. There are no tearful meetings or big blow-ups, or we just had, at least so far. Again, it kind of goes to our people that, hey, they're open to take it on and make it better. And the way I look at it is, if we introduce something like EOS and it just doesn't work, well, we'll do something else. You know, it's, we're not a big corporation. We make our own rules of how things go here. If you work for a giant company and you're a manager, you're looking at a chart that says on Tuesdays you do this, you know, while standing on 1 foot, and you can't stand on 2 feet, and you can't do it on Wednesday. You know, it's like, it's just very, very different in small business.
Yeah. Well, totally. Yeah. Well, we found it so helpful, and we've also, you know, we've also felt like it's given everybody on the leadership team a voice. And what I found is that people were chiming in from different departments and really adding tremendous value to the perspective. Maybe one department was in a kind of a, maybe the purchasing department was in this mental rut about a certain issue. And then we have somebody from sales say, hey, why don't you think about this? And it's kind of really helped in a way create this brain trust of people that help us execute at a much higher level because we're all involved, which has been such a blessing.
You know, you find that people want to be involved, and sometimes they just don't think it's maybe their place to be involved. And this allows people to truly be involved. And sometimes, like it or not, they're gonna have a big task to do, and it brings them into a sometimes an area of discomfort, which people, that's how you grow, right?
That's exactly how you grow. Isn't that the truth? That's the part we call it swapping paint. Like, we're bumping into each other and swapping a little paint, and that when you swap the paint, that's where the growth actually happens, because it's a little upsetting inside yourself, but it requires you to evaluate those things and continue to grow and see which part you can own, and move forward and grow. So, yep. Well, we are running out of time, but what I want to do real quick is I like to do this at the very end of my interviews, and I call it the rapid fire section, where I kind of ask you some questions, and they can be one word answers, or they can be, you can spend as much time as you want. So you're,
careful. I spend too much time.
So what time do you get up in the mornings?
Usually about 5 o'clock.
Okay. You and I are the same. Do you go to bed at 9:10?
Man, by 9, I'm usually in bed with a book. Okay. I've taken my melatonin, and I am trying to get drifty.
I took that one time, and I had the weirdest nightmares. I'm like, I ain't taking that crap anymore. It helps you sleep. The melatonin helps you sleep pretty well, huh?
It's been great for me. Yeah.
Really?
My problem is I'll wake up in the middle of the night, and my gears start going, and I cannot go back to sleep. Wow. And I still battle that, but melatonin and just a series of other things, nighttime
ritual. So what, well, just tell me what that is real quick. So now I'm curious. You give me 30 seconds on what your nighttime ritual is. So it's 9 o'clock. You've got a book. What is your ritual?
Got a book. I've tried not to have any screen time whatsoever. A good couple of hours before, no TV, no cell phone, no computer. I have these Philips smart light bulbs that I can change the light in our bedroom, and I have them in our bathroom as well. So you can do it. It goes back to caveman days. You slept with the sun. So the sun is kind of it makes the room feel like the sun's going down. So it's naturally to your body, it's time to go to bed, time to go to sleep. So that, no caffeine. Like, I'm a big coffee drinker, but it's really rare that I would have caffeine afternoon. You know, don't exercise too close to bedtime, because that's not good. Alcohol, which, you know, I'll have wine, but if I have more than a little, it really affects my sleep. But that's kind of my ritual.
I like that. That's really good. I'm not that good at turning the screens off that close to bed, but I should probably. That's a really good thing. You're right, because it does, that kind of stimulation and that kind of light messes with you, for sure. And then the alcohol thing is also something that, man, if I have a couple of beers past 7 o'clock, I mean, it messes with me. Like at 3 a.m. I'm like, ooh, what's that? You know,
I also have a cold pad that is under our, you know, that we sleep on top of. And it's, I can't remember the name of it, but this, we had a speaker come and talk to us about this stuff about sleep, and it circulates water underneath you. And so it brings the surface temperature of my bed down to 55 degrees. And so you're never hot.
No hot spots.
And so you don't wake up perspiring or anything like that. So that's a big key to sleep, is having it cool enough in the room, and also total blackout. You can't have any light, whether it's moonlight coming through your shades or whatever. Those are some other things I work on, and I'm not perfect at it. Believe me, I'm not, but it's kind of fun.
I've got buddies that love barbecue, so they'd love that cold blanket thing to mitigate their meat sweats.
Exactly.
Speaking of books, what are a couple of titles of your favorite books that maybe you give out or that you recommend the most to other people that are kind of wired like us?
Well, I don't read a lot of self-help books. When somebody gives me one and I read it, I do enjoy it. But my favorite author is Cormac McCarthy. In fact, my middle child is named Cormac. He's a Texas author and kind of a dark author, but I any of his novels, if you've never read a Cormac McCarthy novel and you like a little edgy, he's from Texas. And so there are a lot of kind of cowboy type stuff that is a little bit dark at times.
What would be a title to start with, a McCarthy book that you say, Craig, if this is your starter kit?
It's got a trilogy, and the order that those three go in, I can't remember, but it's The Crossing, All the Pretty Horses, which a movie was made about that. So The Crossing, All the Pretty Horses, and I cannot remember the name of the third one. But that trilogy is wonderful.
Okay. Have you read anything by McMurtry? James McMurtry?
I haven't, but I should.
I'm going to give you one called Leaving Cheyenne. It has the best opening paragraph to any book I've ever read.
Give it to me, and I'll tell you what, I'll trade you. I'll bring you a Cormac McCarthy.
Deal. I will bring it to you. It's great. And McMurtry, he's the one who wrote Lonesome Dove, which is one of my favorites.
So Cormac McCarthy wrote The Road, which was a movie, and he wrote No Country for Old Men, which is
Okay. I've not seen that movie, but I'd rather read the book first, maybe.
Well, the books are always better, right?
Yeah.
The No Country for Old Men, fantastic movie.
Is it? I've heard it was dark, and I haven't gotten around to seeing that.
A little freaky. Great acting. So I just read two Elmer Kelton novels. If you ever read any Elmer Kelton, he's a real cowboy writer and from Texas. And not dark, just good. The Time It Never Rained is my favorite of his. And it's just a story of West Texas rancher fighting the lack of rain. And it's just so well done.
I love it. Well, good. Well, we'll check. And I'll link all these titles in the show notes so you guys can see those. Okay, let me see. I've got a couple more questions. This is kind of a fun question. This is a Back to the Future question. If you had a DeLorean in the garage and you got in that thing and you could go back and whisper something in your 35-year-old ear, what would you say?
In my 35-year-old ear? Man, I would have made sure I just kept taking reasonable risks, which I pretty much have done. But that's, I think, a big key to a 35-year-old.
You would reassure the 35-year-old.
Yeah, I think
Tom.
So. I don't. That's one I might have to think about for a while to get any real advice. I mean, I've done so many things wrong. I would probably tell myself, don't become too reliant on any one person in your business.
Okay.
Keep it so that if anybody leaves you, that you're fine, because they're going to leave.
Right.
And it's usually, it turns into a good thing because it brings new blood in and shifts things around. But I've had a couple people over the years that have quit, kind of my right-hand person. And when I first get the news, I'm like, wow, what am I going to do? Well, it's worked out just fine.
Well, this is your gray hair speaking right now. It's totally what's happening.
I mean, look at me 15 years ago and I had brown hair or black hair, whatever you want to call it. That is.
Well, man, Tom, this has been a super fun interview.
Super fun for me.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Well, are there any parting thoughts from you?
Well, I think what you're doing is very cool. I can't wait to listen to all these podcasts from all the other people that you have visited with and that you're going to visit with. I was going to say, if I had a DeLorean and went back to my 18-year-old self, getting ready to go away to school, it doesn't matter what you major in. I think going to school is great. It's not for everybody. I don't think everybody needs to go to university or college, but I think it is real important for anybody, no matter what your major is, take business courses, squeeze some in, even if you don't like them. Learning terminology and the way things work, and someday you're going to be in a room full of really smart business people and you're going to think, I have no idea what they're talking about. And if I would have stuck with a few more accounting classes or finance classes or economics classes, I would have been a lot better prepared to do that. I've had to get a master's degree along the way, just not literally, but like, hey man, what does this mean? You know?
Well, that's an excellent parting thought. Yeah, Tom, thank you so much. Well, folks, that wraps up our show for this week. Do me a favor and type in truegritpodcast.com and subscribe to the True Grit blog. On Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you will get a super short nugget that will help you become a better leader. Included in these posts, you will also get the show notes with links to books, articles, and other cool things discussed on the show. Thanks, as always, for listening to the True Grit Podcast, where we believe that personal growth and helping each other solve important problems is the best way to make the world a better place.